He's got a beautiful backswing.
Dad, oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know?
What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the 73rd Hole. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams with you due to some minor scheduling conflicts that are golf-related in their own right. We're just recording one big show this week. We're recapping everything from this past weekend to Dustin Johnson getting the 30-under from someone with no status, winning the Women's Open Championship, Phil Mickelson on the Champions Tour. All that, we're going to break it all down, and we'll get you ready for the BMW Championship. That's coming up after the break. We're going to do about half the show before the break, recapping everything that has taken place over the last several days in the world of golf, and then after the break, we are going to give you all of our picks, preview everything for the BMW Championship at Olympia Fields just outside of Chicago. So we got to start with Dustin Johnson at the Northern Trust at TPC Boston. Taylor, 30 under par. He finishes 11 shots clear of the field. Trivia, top of your head. I don't know if you've seen it in the last couple of days. Largest margin of victory on tour since?
Is, man, I feel like someone's won by more than 15 since Tiger in 2000, but is that...
Not by more than 15.
Not by more than 11,
yes.
By more than 11, yes. Is that it? Did someone else win by 12 or more?
Someone else has won by more than 11 since Tiger.
I'm actually
kind of surprised you don't know this, because I think we talked about it a few weeks ago.
We probably did, and I don't know why I'm not thinking
about it. Because I was on the course Sunday, and I remembered our conversation from a few weeks ago, and I told my buddies, I was like, that's the biggest margin of victory since... And I got it right when we looked it up.
It's because we're recording early is probably why I'm not thinking about who is it.
Phil the Thrill, baby.
Oh, at...
06, he won by 13.
Before the Southern Bell
or whatever it's called?
Yeah, the week before the Masters, yeah. Because he was one of the few players to win the week before the Masters. That used to be a similar curse to the par 3 contest. You didn't want to win the week before the Masters because no one had won it in forever. And then Phil ended up breaking that because he won by 13.
The Bell South Classic.
Bell South, yeah. Yeah. I remember that tournament being a pretty big deal for that reason. Specifically right there. So yeah, I do remember that now. And Phil, we'll talk about Phil later on. Went out on Champions Tour. We had talked about it before when he turned 50. You know, will he go out on the Champions Tour? And had he made it through on the FedEx Cup, he wouldn't be out there. But for whatever reason, I tried to look it up. I have no idea why Champions Tour is playing on Monday. I don't know if it's to not compete against the playoff competition. Who knows, maybe it's Corona. I'm not real sure. But nevertheless, he shot a 61 yesterday, and he actually had a one-shot lead. I think they had that whatever the Ozark National course playing pretty easy, because at -3 got you around T35 or something like that for the
he's one shot clear,
2 weeks on the Champions Tour. Was it last week when they were playing at Firestone and there was two guys that were under par
a couple weeks ago. It was very much U.S. Open conditions
We got this, so they totally flip-flopped it around. But it's cool to see Phil out there playing on, they're not playing extremely short golf courses, but they're a little bit shorter. There was that
they're
300
just not too far up the road from us at Ozark National. That's 4 or 5 hours from us here in Oklahoma City.
No, we can make it up there for sure. And there was that video went around of Phil drove like a 350-yard par 4.
Hitting balls.
And, you know, he's just teeing it high, let it fly out there. And So going back to DJ, largest win since Phil at the Bell South. It looked like DJ was playing a different golf course out there, in all honesty. And people had been making and saying all the different things throughout the week of, oh, it's the second lowest relative to par in PGA Tour history. And for me, I had known because I was watching it live whenever it was happening. Ernie Els, I believe it was 2003, shot 31 under at Kapalua, which is currently the record. Well, for anyone who isn't aware, Kapalua is a par 33 golf course.
A par 73 golf course.
73, yeah, well, 33. We're thinking 33 under 31. Yeah, it's not a par 33. That would be pretty insane. But, par 73 golf course, and this one's a par 71. So I think 30 under on a par 71 is just a little bit better than 31 on a par 73. That's just me.
Yeah, I think so, too, because Kapalua, obviously, you have many more birdieable holes out there with the par 5s. You get some short par 5s out there. They're long on the card, but these guys get rolling down the hill 420 yards, and it turns into not a very long par 5.
And we're not acting like they were playing a U.S. Open course this week. I mean, -10 got you T29.
Right.
So these scores were low.
Top
125 players on the FedEx Cup rankings. Not like there's a bunch of chumps out there playing. But at the same time, as we saw at the PGA Championship a few weeks ago, when it was just a couple double digit winning scores, when you got 10 under is essentially T30 in a sense. You know that the course isn't playing extremely difficult per se, but still to go out there and win by 11 shots, you're playing some type of different golf than the rest of the field.
Yeah, let's read off some of the DJ stats from this past week at the Northern Trust. This is all coming from Justin Ray on Twitter, at Justin Ray Golf, who does a phenomenal job. He finds these crazy stats and puts them out. So 187 for DJ's final three rounds is the lowest score over 54 holes in PGA Tour history.
60, 64, 63.
How you doing?
That's crazy.
187.
And that's par 71. That's not on a par 70 either.
Right. And that's, yeah. I mean, imagine a guy, you know, I mean, we play with guys like this who go out and they'll shoot 94, 93 in a couple rounds. That's 187. Yeah. Took DJ three rounds to get to 187. Pretty impressive.
I saw a funny meme that went around that was DJ shot 30 under for this tournament, and it was most people haven't made 30 birdies in their entire life.
30 birdies is a lot.
It is, yeah. And yeah. That's 30 under. That's including no bogey. Or
for the record, I'm fairly certain DJ did not make 30 birdies this week.
I'm sure he didn't.
Because he made so damn many eagles.
Yeah. And we talk about the easiness of the course. I mean, we saw it in the second round. Scottie Scheffler shoots a 59, and DJ has to par his last seven holes.
Yeah, DJ was 11 under through 11 and limped home to a 60.
Well, he was 7 under through 5?
Under through 5.
Holy moly.
Yeah, and 11 under through 11. I bet our boy Reen might have been getting a little nervous with DJ 11 under through 11. That Guinness record was in jeopardy, but then DJ hit the brakes.
If DJ had gone with the Steve Ball philosophy of going one shot at a time and thinking about the process, he probably wouldn't have parred seven holes in a row.
Yeah, he started playing 30 feet from the flag and two-putting. Coward, right?
And you know what? If that gets you to win the tournament by 11 shots, do whatever you got to do.
Do whatever you got to do.
I agree. And we can also mention that now he is number one in the FedEx Cups, and I do believe he moved up to number one in the world again with this win.
Did he? I haven't pulled up the official world golf ranking this morning.
I think he did. I saw a headline on that. I need a triple check, but I'm pretty sure.
There it is. Dustin Johnson, John Rahm, JT, Rory, and Morikawa. That's your top five. Yeah, DJ one, Rahm two. Thomas all the way down to three now. Wow. How quickly things can change in the official world golf rankings. You look at the amount of eagles that DJ made, five eagles, most by a tour winner. What's it say here? Most by a tour winner ever. Ever. Most to ever.
How many eagles was it again?
Five eagles. So he had five eagles He had five eagles to three bogeys. Can you name the other two players in the last 15 years that have had more eagles than bogeys in a PGA Tour win? I almost guarantee you cannot name either.
No, because they're going to be at courses that are going to be a lot easier. So I'm going to say that I have no idea who.
I'll give you a major hint. One of them was in 2019.
2019. Oh wow.
Yeah.
JT Poston.
It was JT Poston. Well done. Yeah. Because he had zero bogeys.
Yeah. Yeah. JT Poston. Yep.
Eagle to zero bogeys, and then Scott Stallings did it in 2012 at True South. Yeah. Four eagles to three.
What a great group of golfers for DJ to join there. That's just a lucrative.
Just elite
group.
Company.
That was like Morikawa a few weeks ago joining Tiger, Rory, and Jack as a 23-year-old
in the
PGA Championship. Yeah, so great for DJ there to win. And you know what's funny? We look back on DJ here, and we made fun of him for switching putters so much, and he finally went back to his spider. Which if he switches from the spider, I don't know what the hell's going on in his head.
If you're new to the podcast, I use the spider, and I'm a spider loyalist. And I use like the exact same make and model DJ uses. I have for years, and it's maybe the greatest invention. It's like the wheel and fire and probably bottled water are at the top, and then right below that's the spider.
Bottled water's pretty good. I hadn't thought about that.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, that is good. Yeah, that's a good comparison. That really is. But and we look back on it, and he's switching all these putters, and he won at the Travelers, but then after that missed the cut at the Memorial, was
80-80.
Yeah, essentially was going to do the same thing at the 3M and withdrew and was just doing horrible. Since then, has finished 12th at St. Jude, finished T2nd at PJ where he had a solo lead after 54 holes, then goes out and win this tournament by 11 strokes. I don't know if this is the start of something special or if DJ's going to go out and miss another cut. He can't miss this cut because there is no cut. But is he going to start finishing down there at the bottom? He's such a wild card. But, man, when he hits, he's damn near unbeatable, and it's at that point we talk about it a good amount of like Rory, Koepka, DJ, Thomas. You know, when these guys catch fire, they're almost unbeatable. And it's like whenever you break down all these different players, if they all caught fire on the same week, who would win? And
there'd be four or five guys 10 shots clear of the field if they all caught fire on the same week.
And it's watching DJ play this last week, man, it'd be hard to see anyone's best golf being better than that.
Do you see how many strokes he gained tee to green on the field?
Got double digits.
It is ignorant. Double digits doesn't even touch it. Right. He gained 18.14 strokes tee to green on the field this week. So the most by a PGA Tour winner in the last 13 years.
So that's 4.5 each round.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah. Man. 4.5 each round off the tee. 18 strokes? 18 strokes on the field, just tee to green, and he was rolling the rock.
If you're rolling the rock whenever you're able to drive it that well, and we've also made how many different notes or whatever on how much his wedge game has improved. And while it has been lacking a little bit this year comparatively to when he was number one from 50 to 125 three or four years ago, however it may be, he's obviously still better than he used to be. And whenever he's able to get all that clicking with his driver, it's tough to beat. And like, man, I mean, obviously when Rory's at his best, we've seen him win majors by 8 strokes more. And man, I think Rory and DJ are probably the two who, when they're at their best, I think it would be tough to beat. I mean, obviously we know Kepka at the majors. JT's such a great player. I really like Rahm this week. We'll get into him a little bit more, so he's another one of those guys. But I mean, you can disagree with me, Colby, if you want.
I don't, because those are the two guys who, more than anybody else over the last decade, are capable of running away from fields. And that's what you talk about. When you're on, are you the most unbeatable? Well, which two guys have, by far and away, the most wins by large margins of victory? I mean, when JT wins, JT usually wins by 1, 2, 3, 4 shots, something in that neighborhood. Kepka, same thing, wins by a couple of shots. DJ,
but he only wins the majors, too.
Only wins the majors. I mean, DJ won by 11 yesterday, but DJ, I think half of DJ's career wins are by at least 3 strokes. Half of his, how many ever wins he has, 22? 22.
He's getting up there, yeah.
I'm pretty sure half of those wins are by at least a margin of 3 shots, and we know what Rory's capable of running away from fields. Look at what he did at the U.S. Open, at Congressional, at the Open Championship.
That was 9 years ago now. Can you believe that?
No, I can't.
That's insane.
No, I can't. No,
9 years ago now.
I can, though, kind of whenever I think about the fact that Rory has stopped winning, which is kind of weird.
That's true. Well, also 9 years ago, because that U.S. Open was the major after he had the collapse at Augusta on Sunday.
Yep.
And so, you know, we talk about Rory and how he has this potential, and I want to get a little bit more into Rory, because we saw another week of, and it's kind of, I mean, he was paired with Tiger on Sunday, right? I mean, I was,
yes.
He was paired, yeah. And so, I mean, I just watched the highlights because they teed off so early, I wasn't getting up to watch the first guys go off and play, but Tiger ended up doing well. But I want to get back to Rory, because it was just another week of him just not having it, and obviously made the cut, got on the weekend. But for a guy who we talk about right now with DJ, who's essentially those two guys you can get out there, run away from it, he's missing something.
Yeah, so quick trivia. Most PGA Tour wins since the beginning of the 2008 season. Can you name the top three? Most PGA Tour wins since the beginning of the 08 season.
Beginning of the 08 season. Well, Tiger won like 5 times before his knee hurt. So I'm gonna say the top three are DJ. I might have the order wrong, too. I'll say, in this PGA Tour, right?
PGA Tour.
PGA yep. Tours. I'll go, and some of these guys, like Thomas wasn't out there since 2008. He went out there 2013 or whatever. So I'm going to leave some of these younger guys out. I'm going DJ, Rory, Tiger in that order.
It is those three. It is not in that order. It's DJ, Tiger, Rory. DJ, 22 wins since the start of the 08 season. Tiger, 21. Rory, 18. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's right, because you go back to 2008, Tiger won how many times? Tiger won 5 or 6 times in 2009. Then
Tiger won 5 times in 13.
Yeah, exactly. Was
world Tiger's number. Won 3 times in the last 2 years.
Yeah. So, I mean, you add it all up, and even though he had that 3 to 4 year hiatus, essentially, he still won how many ever times. So, yeah, that's very interesting to hear that, and it's really not surprising, and that just goes to show that and what we mentioned – Rory and DJ, I mean, we love Tiger so much here. If Tiger gets everything clicking, he can do the same thing. I mean, in all honesty, let's be honest. But he's just at the point where, like I said, he's down there with Rory, and he's just missing a little bit of something. I don't know what it's going to take for him to get it clicking. You know, I hope for our sake that Tiger can put it all together this week. So
I think he just needed some reps. I think he's close.
From what I saw, he does look close. We keep talking about that damn putter. I'm still worried about that he doesn't get it, doesn't have it right there. And so does he have to play courses that he's played hundreds of times, essentially, so
to
he
know
knows
exactly
the greens?
How every putt breaks.
East Lake, Augusta, some of these other courses. Or does he just need to have it where it's at the perfect speed? Because we've always known that he struggled on slower greens. I don't think they'll be that slow this week at Olympia Fields.
Supposed to top out at 12.5 is what they're hoping for.
That's pretty good. That's not Augusta or Memorial speed, but that's pretty high.
They said was running about 13, so it's close to Memorial speed.
Yeah, and I bet towards the end of the day it was 13.5 once they started to burn up
a little bit.
But that's traditionally
they let them get real crispy. Memorial.
Well, they were just they literally tore them up right after, and
not even right after, during the event. The event was still going on.
Right as soon as Rahm and Ryan Palmer. We're in the final group, and right as soon as they got off the hole, there they were.
They tapped in on six, and they were over to the side with saw cutters waiting to rip it up.
They say we got to get this baby started and rolling. I loved it too, and I mean, just going back to the DJ thing, and we look at the world rankings. He's at 9.16 now, and Rahm's at number 2 at 8.8. Then JT's at 8.5, and then Rory's down there at essentially 8. So there's
pretty decent drop. From three to four,
and then at 5 is 7.4. So I mean. You're seeing then all the way down. Kepka's at 7 at 6.1. So you're starting to see some separation there.
Yeah, the drop from 6 to 7 is a full point, which is a lot in the official world golf rankings.
And too, also looking at Rory, who's number 4, a lot of his, because these go back over the last 2 years, he had such a great year last year where he pretty much set the record for strokes gained tee to green before DJ might break it this year if he keeps doing what he's doing. I don't know where he was earlier in the year, but from what he did last week, it was insane. But nevertheless, I think a lot of Rory's stuff is coming off of last year, so we look out on it from this year. And, yeah, I just think that if DJ can keep this trend going, I mean, I don't see how he ever finishes outside the top five.
Yeah, I mean, so you know Rory before the break had 7 straight top fives? Rory now has 7 straight finishes outside the top 10. It's the most consecutive worldwide finishes outside the top 10 for Rory since 2009. I mean, that shows the consistency that he's played with for more than a decade, that he's always in the top 10, but that also shows what a slump he's in right now. And he was in good spirits after the round the other day. He joked with the media. He's like, you know, if you need somebody to finish it even to 2 under, I'm your guy. Lay your money on me. And I'm like, it's good that he's joking around. He's in good spirits. He's not getting down on himself. He knows he's one of the best players in the world. He knows he just needs it to click, but...
And he probably knows that he's close, too.
Probably knows that he's close. And honestly, if he could choose between his game peaking now and his game peaking in mid-September to early November...
It's no discussion.
I think he'd pick mid-September to early mid-November, but... Still, you'd like to see some signs from Rory that he's kind of starting to get it figured out. By the way, we were talking about the official world golf ranking. Players to reach number 1 in the official world golf ranking from 1996 to 2010. Six guys from 96 to 2010. That's 15-year span if you include 96 and 2010. This year, 5 different guys have reached number 1 in the world.
That's crazy.
It's insane, isn't it?
And it shows the... And there had been discussion for how many years when it came out, the Tiger effect of how would the younger generation be impacted by Tiger's success? And I mean, we're seeing it first hold. I mean, look at these guys that are up there contending. I mean, these are straight athletes out there golf. I mean, obviously DeChambeau gets talked about a lot, but none of these golfers that you see right now in the top. Right now, I'm scrolling through in the top 10 in the world. Besides maybe a JT, and I mean, when you talk about their size, I mean, Webb's kind of a slight skinnier guy, but nevertheless, a lot of these guys are, you know, bigger, bulkier guys. I mean, we got Bryson, Koepka, Rory's bulked up, DJ, Rahm's not a small guy by any stretch, and you know, comparatively to what it used to be, I mean, these guys are just straight athletes. And I think you're finally starting to see the Tiger effect. I mean, it started years ago now, but you're seeing how athletes are starting to transcend into the game, because it got brought up how many ever times it was Tiger and VJ kind of set the trend for working out and being an athlete and fitness on the PGA Tour. And now every single one of these guys is an athlete, and there wouldn't be a whole lot of separation clearly as much. If you put a golfer and an NBA player on the basketball court 30 years ago, the difference in skill level would be dramatic, you know. And now, while it's still dramatic, it's not near as bad as it would
right,
be.
Right, but now we've got Finau and DJ and Koepka and Rory and all these guys, Cameron Champ, these guys who are phenomenal, phenomenal athletes. So I totally get what you're saying. And, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of rock stars on the PGA Tour right now who are – good athletes who I feel like are going to be around for a long time. I think golf is in a good position. It's in a much better position right now, I think, to sustain when Tiger does finally retire than it was, let's say, 8-9 years ago whenever Tiger first really started. Because, you know, he had the knee in 09 and the stuff with Elin, but he bounced back from the knee fairly quick. He played in the 2010 Masters. It was, you know, he was kind of back around, you know, 08, dealing with the stuff at Torrey and everything. But really, whenever all the back issues started is whenever we got into the conversation of will Tiger ever play again. And at that time, I did not think the game was in a very good position to transition to a post-Tiger world. And I feel like we're in a better spot now to transition into a post-Tiger world by miles than we would have been when all the back issues started with Tiger.
Well, I think you saw it at three different segments, in my opinion. So you look back on it when he had the Elin stuff, 2010 and 2011, because he had a little bit of injuries after that too. And he was working with Foley, and we're like, oh, no, what, you know, how's this going to work out? And golf really wasn't that entertaining when Luke Donald, Lee Westwood, and Martin Kaymer were switching between number one in the world.
It was a total snooze fest. Let's call it what it was.
It really was.
It was a total snooze fest.
I mean, Rory was out there becoming the young gun, but at the same time, he wasn't near as polarizing as what we needed. And then Tiger came back for essentially 2 years, and we kind of started to see that draw come back. And then, like you mentioned, Colby, the back issues. And that was about the time where we had Spieth was coming out, JT was coming out, Rory had just won two straight majors in 2014. We saw DJ was coming up, Dave's form was coming around. So basically the point I'm trying to get at here is we're kind of seeing at three different intervals in five-year stretches. At the start of 2010, I thought golf was in a really bad place and was on the decline. You saw it from the numbers, too. Golf course where shutdowns were high, manufacturing revenue was down, everything was down.
Nike quit making golf equipment.
Yeah, well, that was after the second time. But, yes, your point is made, yes. And that was right in the middle of Tiger's comeback, and they were like, well, Tiger's not going to make it back, so we're not going to make any golf clubs. And you saw it throughout, and I just think that throughout these three different processes, and obviously Tiger's still out there. I'm looking at, he's number 17 in the world right now. Start of the year is number 6. So, I mean, he's definitely got a chance to still be out there and still a name, but we're prognosticating for the future of the game. And to look at these athletes in the game out there, I think really the only thing that would stop golf from getting even bigger and more popular it needs to be if Tiger goes out is all these critics talking about how they need to dial the ball back or dial distance back, equipment back, and all this, because it's just like I mentioned before with the athletes thing. It's like, even if you gave players back in the 90s or the 80s the equipment we have now, there's not one golfer who would sniff 200 miles an hour ball speed. Not one.
No,
maybe like a Hank Keeney or something like that earlier, John Daly, but those are exceptions,
right?
Should
we tell wide receivers to run slower?
Yeah, Tyreek, yeah, slow down a little bit, buddy.
Should we tell small forwards to not jump as high?
Yeah, LeBron, don't dunk.
I mean, what
don't
are we
dunk
doing?
Over this guy.
Yes, you know, the technology has advanced. So has the human body. I mean, the human body is different now in the way that we all are able to train, get ourselves fit, golf-specific workouts. The human body's different than it was 30 years ago. That, along with the technology, is why we're seeing these ridiculous numbers. And the ridiculous numbers don't bother me. We're getting down a little bit of a rabbit hole, but I'm okay with it because this is an important conversation in golf. I don't mind the big numbers. I just want to see entertaining golf. And when has golf been more entertaining than it is right now? I mean, unless you want to go back to like the 2000 PGA Championship when Tiger was in a playoff right down to the end. Other than that, on a week-in, week-out basis, when has golf been more entertaining than it is right now?
It's tough to define it. I mean, you could go back to some specific tournaments where it was a Tiger so and so showdown, like Tiger Phil at Doral in 2005.
Tiger and John Daly at Harding Park. Yeah, I mean, there are times, yes.
Yes, but we're talking an overall general basis here. And, you know, the reason I bring up the reasons that those things would hold the game back is because, like you mentioned with the other sports, is that, and every other sport, even in other individual sports, that's tennis. You know, you're playing against another person in this aspect, you're playing against a course, because even in tennis, it's not obviously the surface you're on matters, but you're going against what your opponent does directly impacts what you do. You know, if they hit you a hard forehand, you've got to do something to get it back in. In football, you have a cornerback covering the receiver. In basketball, you can play defense on the guy that can jump high. In golf, the only defense is the course. There's not fans out there, unless it's the Ryder Cup, and even then they don't yell in your backswing or anything like that. You know, there's a respect.
Well, they're not supposed to.
Not supposed to. It still happens. And so I just think from that aspect of it, people look at golf as they do in these other sports of that there needs to be a moderation and there needs to be a cutoff point. And for me, it all goes down to course design, because that is the opponent. That is the defense to the wide receiver or to the shooting guard, whoever it may be. The course is the defender. So you have to make the defender better, because the offense is getting better because of simply technology, age, and information. It's just like anything. Every sport is essentially healthier than it ever has been, because they have a lot better testing. Yeah, every athlete trains differently than they need to. I mean, look at all the what's it called, where you can get in the little cooling down chamber.
The cryotherapy.
Cryotherapy, yeah. Did they have that back in the 80s and 90s?
I'm betting no.
You know, for these guys, I mean,
they had Coors Light therapy.
Yeah, exactly. That's and I mean, there's that famous picture. Who was it? Joe Namath on the side smoking a cig.
Oh, yeah.
One of the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. Golfers on the tour used to smoke cigs.
Oh,
Jack,
yeah.
Jack Nicklaus.
Arnold Palmer used to smoke cigs all the time.
Was it Jack or was it Arnold Palmer who said that he used to smoke on the course, and then one day he was playing a tournament and he looked over and there was like a 6-year-old kid looking up at him while he was smoking a cigarette, and he decided at that very moment he was done smoking cigarettes on the course. I can't remember if it was Arnie or Jack. That sounds like an Arnie
quote. I think it would be. There was a famous picture I actually posted on one of our social medias. It was
73rd hole, by the way. Facebook, yeah, Twitter,
73rd hole, absolutely. It was Arnie and Ben Hogan, and they're standing on a tee box waiting to hit, and they both ripping a cig right there, and these are two of the five best players of all time, and this is what they're doing. You wouldn't see that anymore. It's just the evolution of it, and like I said, we did get down a rabbit hole, but it all connects to what we were saying about golf being in such a great place. And I really do think that the people talking about dialing distance back and changing equipment, changing the ball, I think that's what's going to hinder the game more than anything.
Yeah, I do too. I think that we should appreciate the game for what it is and not try to craft it into something that we want it to be. You know, people trying to craft it to where these guys can only hit it 280 off the tee. No. If guys can get their body in shape, and if we've got big, strong athletes coming out on the PGA Tour generating 200 miles an hour ball speed, then we've got big, strong athletes coming out on the PGA Tour generating 200 miles an hour ball speed. And what's great about golf is that it you don't have to be that guy to be good. You know, in basketball, there's a certain body type. You know, I worked in the media for a while. I got to go in the locker room, down on the court and stuff. And somebody like me, Nope. Don't have a chance. Don't have a chance. Those dudes are behemoths. Golf, I saw on Sunday, they cut from Dustin Johnson to Louis Oosthuizen to Harry Higgs. And all three of them are on the leaderboard. Dustin Johnson, tall, 6'4", built, chiseled, elite athlete. And then they cut to Louis. Louis's a little bit more of a little guy. He's a smaller guy, kind of small, slight build, doesn't hit it near as far. And then they cut to Harry Higgs. Harry Higgs is not your prototypical athlete, folks.
No, you've seen
Harry Higgs. But all three of them are right there on the leaderboard. That's what makes golf beautiful.
Well, and I think it's the same for every sport. And it just kind of depends on the level, just like you said, Colby, where there's always, no matter what sport you're playing, if you're a better athlete, you have better genetics, you have a better chance of being good. I mean, that's just clear to say. But you look at it, like, for example, basketball, like you mentioned, the people who you always hear about, J.J. Barea, Spud Webb, Muggsy Bogues.
Nate Robinson, little guys.
Yeah, because these are the only little guys who do it, you know? And
yeah, because one of those guys comes along every two decades.
Right, and, you know, us being OU fans, we know about the short quarterback phenomenon of, because with Baker and Kyler Murray, when they come out, people talking about, oh, they're too short, because normally quarterbacks are too big, and you're not going to see a 200-pound defensive tackle out there, you know. So you have to be a certain size. At some point, we look at golf, and Jim Furyk, as one of the ugliest swings ever, doesn't hit it that far. He's a top five money-earning winner of all time on the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
And
that's only, by the way, whenever we get to our BMW Championship preview, only twice, really, in the last 20 years has Olympia Fields hosted a big-time event. They hosted the 03 U.S. Open and the 2015 USAM, and it's so interesting, and we'll get into the talk about course history, but the two winners at the two events over the last 20 years at Olympia Fields, Jim Furyk and Bryson DeChambeau. Yeah, go ahead and figure out how your course history factors in this week, Olympia Field.
Yeah, that's I totally had forgot that that's where I knew Bryson had won the USM. I'd forgotten that it was at Olympia Fields. That is pretty crazy. And that I picked Bryson last week. He missed the cut, so he will have a little bit of prep to get ready for Olympia Fields. So that may be something to look at there. And I think it's going to be a really, really cool course to see this week. And now just going back to, you know, definitely the state of the game, I think we're in such a great place. And I hopefully with, you know, the world gets back on track and that Corona is not going to mess the future, you know, future of the schedule and everything up going forward. Because we also do have some big news about where one of the Korean events was going to be, or Asian events was going to be at.
Yes.
So, right before we go to break, we'll kind of dive into this. The CJ Cup, which was traditionally held over in Malaysia, JT had won it two or three times.
I think, isn't it?
I think that was the Malaysia one.
Let me look. Be wrong. I had it pulled up over here. Let me pull it up.
There's one that JT would always win.
Okay, so this year's CJ Cup is moving from the club at Nine Bridges on Jeju Island, South Korea.
Yeah. Okay, it is on Korea. Okay. So, nevertheless, yeah, it is in Korea. So, it got moved from Korea to, which I thought was Malaysia, Korea to Shadow Creek in Las Vegas, which is, for anyone who isn't aware, that's where they held the Tiger Phil first match at.
Yes, the $9 million
the $9 million in Vegas. Where they're hitting to the 18th green off of the putting green.
Underlies,
pretty cool. But, so, I really liked the course when we saw it for the match. I didn't like the golf that we saw because I think they were both around like one or two under.
It was sloppy.
Wasn't the best golf played, but I really liked the course. I think it's gonna be cool to see that that course host a tournament, and I think it'll be interesting to see the crowd or the field that it draws. What I meant to say, yes, the amount of players in the depth of field.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching a tour event there. I think it'll be awesome.
I think it will be too. And I need to look it up. I didn't see where exactly it.
Prime time golf, baby.
Where does it fall in the schedule, Colby?
Where does it fall in the schedule? The October 15th through 18th event will follow the Shriners Hospitals for Children Open at TPC Summerlin in Las Vegas the week before. Perfect.
Okay, so here we go.
Anybody who's playing both weeks, you never have to leave your hotel. Check in for 2 weeks.
So here, yeah, absolutely. So we got the BMW this week, then we got the Tour Championship, and then the week after that we have the Safeway Open, which is in Napa South at Silverado Resort. So anybody who's
playing in the Safeway has to fly cross country and cross three time zones to get from the Safeway to Wingfoot.
Well, also too, you're going from Georgia, which is Georgia's
East Coast, yeah.
Yeah, Eastern time zone. Yeah. Well, I know it's on the East Coast.
Eastern time zone, yes.
So, you're going from Georgia to California to New York. I don't think you're going to see that many people do that.
Yeah, I don't think guys who are in the Tour Championship are going to do that.
There's only 30 of them that are done.
Right. I think the field at Safeway is going to be littered with a bunch of smaller names.
And then we look at it, then right for that, we got the U.S. Open. Then we're moving into the, what is that? Corrales, Punta Rica.
Punta Cana.
And then the Sanderson Farms, then the Shriners, then the CJ Cup at Shadow Creek is after that. Yeah. So we're
still waiting for new venues for the Zozo Championship and the WGC HSBC Championship event. Both of those still currently scheduled in Japan and China, but we do not expect those events to take place in those respective countries. We expect them to be moved to the United States, likely to California, which again, in on more primetime golf.
You can't beat primetime golf. We saw at the PGA Championship, and I think that is the way that it needs to go, and hopefully...
Although that's going
to
be after time changes, isn't it? After we fall back, spring forward?
Fall back, spring forward, yeah.
Yeah, fall back. So that'll be after we fall back, so it won't be as primetime as like the PGA Championship was. But yeah, we can still get golf going until 7 o'clock.
Yeah,
something like that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
maybe 7:30, 8 o'clock, something like that.
Yeah, so very, very good stuff. And yeah, like you said, it'll be interesting to see in the next couple of weeks if they come out with venues for those events. Because looking at the purses here, last year JT in all three of the events, the winner got $1.755 million.
Wow.
So I mean, these are WGC purse sizes essentially. So I mean, these are
Tiger's defending at Zozo, so you would imagine he'll play Zozo wherever they put it.
You would think so. Rory would be defending at the HSBC, beat Xander in the playoff there last year, and so that's always a really big event. And so yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. So we'll, as soon as we hear if those events, we will let you know either on the podcast or social media depending on what time they come out. But that's definitely something to look at the schedule over these next couple weeks for sure. But until those get announced, we just have to sit back and watch watch the BMW, the Tour Championship, and the U.S. Open. It's just really
poor,
rough.
Poor us.
Poor us. Poor us golf fans and all the golf fans
and
out there.
And then after those get announced, we'll have the Masters on the way. Poor us.
It's just a rough time. It really is.
I mean, we had to grind through a couple months with no golf, but we're now just being littered with unbelievable golf.
And as much as it stunk without golf, we got to see a lot of Tiger highlights during that time. So that was, we got to appreciate his greatness. So there's not all that Enzo. And we'll get to a little bit more Tiger after the break because a relative of Tiger's, a.k.a. his son Charlie, won another event this past week.
Quick dub for Charlie. Quickly before we go to break, one more star I want to touch on. Sophia Popoff this past weekend wins the AIG Women's Open Championship across the pond. First time it ever, the women's event had ever been hosted at Muirfield. I remember that was a big story a few years back. And Sophia Popoff comes in as the number 304 ranked player in the world. No status on the LPGA or Symmetrica Tours, which is the equivalent of the Korn Ferry Tour. No status on either of those tours. Wins the event. It was a phenomenal story. I just watched an interview with her this morning on Morning Drive, and it was an awesome interview. She gave a great interview, talked about what all it means to her. She battled Lyme disease for a couple of years, took them a long, long time to figure out what was wrong with her, why she was so sick. So it was a really cool story to see someone with no status. I mean, you talk about a life-changing win. The amount of money, first off, that she made for somebody with no status is life-changing. Second off, the fact that she now has graciously accepted her LPGA Tour invite and will be in all the other majors. I mean, good for Sophia Popoff. That is why we love golf, a story like that where one great week has totally changed her life.
Well, we go back and I got it right here that her best results in major championships on the LPGA, her best finish in a major before this was a T57 in 2018 at the Women's PGA Championship.
She came totally out of nowhere.
Totally. And so reading in here, in February 2019, she came within a stroke of gaining a place in the LPGA Tour for the 2019 season via qualifying school. So she missed the Q school by one stroke back at the start of 2019. And then she won three tournaments on the Cactus Tour, which is out in Arizona. It's kind of a mini tour out there. And then she followed up with a victory at the AGI Women's Open at World Touring. She qualified because she had a high finish at the Marathon Classic, which I guess was it last or a couple weeks ago, something along those lines. Let's see here when the date was. Yep, August 6th to the 9th. So, yep, just a few weeks ago, she had a pretty good finish in there, which gave her the spot, which is, it just goes to show how, and you see it, we talk about on the PGA Tour all the time because drop down the Korn Ferry and just how many great players there are. It goes the same for the women. I mean, there's just so many great, great, talented players out there, and you give someone the right week, the right conditions, the right mindset, and they can go out and change their lives for the rest of their career. And you know, we were looking at it earlier, kind of made a joke because she was born exactly 1 month after you were. So I mean, she's still fairly young in her career, and for her to get this type of win, whether it be for endorsement purposes, whether it be just to have some status for someone who didn't have it, it's got to be something that is a super relieving weight off of her shoulders, because from all the great guests that we've had on who have been able to make it to the tour, we know that the grind out there is extremely serious, and it's no different for the women than it is for the men. It is a grind full out and full through.
Yes, 100%. So, awesome story there. Huge congratulations to her. Big week on the Korn Ferry this week. You know, the Korn Ferry, we talked to Taylor Moore. They're not giving out cards, but after this week is when the top 10 finishers on the Korn Ferry points race, all the standings, all that stuff, will be given special status and exemption into certain PGA Tour events next season. So, big week for all those guys on the Korn Ferry Tour. We're going to take a break, come back, and we'll preview everything taking place this week at the BMW Championship. Big week for a lot of guys outside the top 30 trying to work their way into Eastlake. That is all coming up next. Stay with us here on the 73rd hole.
When something the size of a golf ball hits your roof, you need to call McRae Roofing. McRae Roofing is Oklahoma's designer roofing service specialist. For years, Jeff McRae and the experienced team at McRae Roofing and Exteriors have served fellow Oklahomans by helping them with their roofing needs. McRae Roofing uses only top quality materials and professional crews to make sure that each job is done right, so it will give you the years of service, security, and protection you need from the unpredictable Oklahoma weather. McRae Roofing offers residential and commercial roofing, ventilation services, and custom copper designs. McRae Roofing is dedicated to exceeding the homeowner's expectations. It's not just a roof, it is your home's crowning glory. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000. Make sure to also visit their website at mcrayroofing.com. That's M-C-R-A-Y roofing.com. Don't get caught with a leaking roof. Contact McRae Roofing for your free inspection today.
Welcome back in. Rolling along here on the 73rd hole, a special power-packed edition of the 73rd hole. We've got a lot of golf ourselves to be played this week. We got a big two-man coming up, the Shrock, this weekend down in Marlow, so we're not going to have time to record later in the week. And yesterday, when we would have recorded our normal recap show, I was at Carson Creek in Stillwater enjoying some good golf up at Carson. It is in immaculate shape. Ted, I don't know if you've ever seen this or not, if you've ever been on a course when they were doing it, they were rolling the fairways yesterday.
Oh, wow.
While we were there.
Yeah. I've seen it. I don't know if I've played, like, was the roller like in front of you the whole day? Were you just like playing right after?
No, it wasn't. We only saw it one time. You've been to Carson. You're very much by yourself on every hole. You can't see any other part of the world that exists aside from the golf hole you're on, which is part of what makes it so great. You feel like you're on your own little planet. The only time we saw it was coming up number 9. We all three hit our tee shots just right over the hill there on number 9 in the fairway, and we looked up, and they had the mower, and then behind the mower, they had the roller coming through, and it was a big, I mean, it was probably 12, maybe 15 feet wide, just big, heavy roller on the back of a tractor, and the guys that we went with said that sometimes, you know, you take the carts out there on the Zoysia and stuff in the fairway, it leaves cart tracks and stuff, so they go out there and they roll the fairways, and they roll all those cart tracks and everything out, and fairways are just pure.
Oh, my. That's insane, but that makes a good point, because that Zoysia sticks up nicely, so you have people out there driving carts, and especially if people drive in the same areas, it can trample it down a lot, and that's for a course like that, that's the last thing that they wanted to do, is have any burn spots or anything bad like that come up. So it doesn't surprise me that they have that, and goes back to another thing that we talked about, the distance debate. You don't want players to hit it far, don't roll your damn fairways, because it gets the grass shorter, the ball's rolling further. So there's another thing that we could talk about on the distance side of it. Don't roll the fairways if you want the distance to be held back, but nevertheless, yeah, it's cool you got to play in that. And then like I said, we got this two man coming up this week. It was busy last week. I gave it a go at the Oklahoma Open. Played a lot better than the final score ended up being.
You played 16 really good holes that second day.
That's the thing.
That's the thing about golf.
That's the thing. And then we talk about it all the time with the analytics and the approachness. And when the tour pros are 50% from 8 feet, you got to hit some shots dicky to be able to, you know, make a lot of birdies. And looking back on it, just wasn't able to hit those amount of shots. But for missing the cut as bad as I did, and for us to have this two man coming up, I'm pretty optimistic. I think we got a good chance to bring it home, baby.
Yeah, I think we're both playing some good golf right now. So looking forward to this weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's scramble and best ball on Saturday. Scramble front nine, best ball on the back nine. And the Sunday's modified alternate shot on the front nine, best ball on the back nine. So we'll update everybody next Monday. We'll do a recap show for the BMW, and we'll probably have to find some highlights, because we probably won't tee off till 1 or 2 in the afternoon Saturday or Sunday. So if Tiger is staring down 83 on Sunday, we're gonna have to have the phones out. We're gonna have to be focused on two things. We're gonna have to give 100% of our focus to two things at once, which is always fun.
Yeah, normally that's because, like you said, 100% to two things, that's 99% or 1%. So no matter what you do, there's not 100% going to one thing. But at the same time, I feel like if Tiger is going for 83, that's just gonna make us play better anyway.
Yeah, that's true. And actually, they might even delay the tournament for an hour or so if Tiger's going for 83, so we can watch the last few holes.
Or they'll probably delay the PGA Tour tournament, because they know that we got our tournament.
That's
going.
A very good point.
That's what they do. So they'll have a Monday finish.
Yeah, it's a very good point. So looking forward to that. Going to be a lot of fun. Looking forward to the BMW Championship this week at Olympia Fields. You know, whenever we had Taylor Gooch on with us, and by the way, if you haven't listened to that interview or any of the great interviews that we had with all of our great guests while golf was on its hiatus, just go back, scroll down the 73rd hole feed, wherever you listen to your podcast, and listen to some of those old interviews. They're really, really good. We had some great guests come on and give us some great content. Taylor Gooch told a great story about him and Coach Mike McGraw letting him hit one in the water and doing all that stuff. So, you know, he's got some history here. But like we talked about before the break, course history here is kind of tough because, number one, they've changed the course. There have been changes. The 2003 U.S. Open was won by Jim Furyk. 2015 USAM was won by Bryson DeChambeau. Not exactly the same styles of golf, even though it wasn't Big Bryson in 2015. It was still a lot bigger than Jim Furyk in 2003. So I think that this tournament, little tough to handicap, but the fact that there is no cut, for me, makes it easier, because I don't end up with a situation like I ran into last week where I run at one guy who shall remain nameless. He's from Hawaii, who misses the cut and just basically kills every every pool that you're in for the entire
week. At least you didn't run them out in everything that you thought you did. Go ahead and fill us in on that story, Colby.
So here's what happens. So we've got two one-and-dones, Tyler and I do. We've got the one here on the podcast, so we've got more golfers available. We're doing that through the Masters. And then we've got the one on the website that's season-long. We use guys in Hawaii and at the Genesis and all this stuff early in the season. And last week, on the website, I ran out Finau and Patrick Reed. So this morning, I get on to make my one-and-done picks, and I look at and I've still got Finau and Patrick Reed available, and I can't figure out what the hell happened. I'm like, what is going on with my picks? So I went back and looked at last week, and it's showing no picks. What happened is last week, I pulled up the one-and-done while we were doing the podcast. I clicked my golfers, but always whenever I go to post our podcast, there's a website we do it all through, and it's a whole process. I've got all these tabs open that I use for all my info while we're doing the pod, and I just go close them all out. And then I post the podcast and move on with my day. I just close the tab out, and I never click submit on my picks. So I now, on the website, still have both Tony Finau and Patrick Reed available. Neither one of them played worth a damn last week. It was actually a pretty convenient no pick.
Well, Reed, because I had Reed pick, he made a whopping like 23,000 here. So you say,
which is negligible. It's not even worth it.
No, and one of the funniest things about this story is my beautiful girlfriend, Caitlin, is in our one-and-done pool as well. She loves golf, maybe even more than we do at this point. And she did not make any picks last week. And she apparently doesn't listen to our podcast because, like we tell them, until the season's over, just keep on going, keep on going. Because even right now, there's the FedEx segment pool that we do. And so you can win money if you win that thing. And there's just so much more. And all these people are like, oh, I'm so far down. I don't have a chance. I don't have a chance. And you were giving Caitlin a little bit of smack for not making any picks. And you look on Monday and you haven't made any picks yourself.
Yeah, that submit picks button. It hides itself, you know.
It's big blue with white letters, but yeah, it doesn't stick out very well.
Yeah, you have to actually submit your picks, which is where I failed.
Well, and also too, one thing too is they send you an email confirmation, so you can get on your email and see, oh well, hey, I had this picked and I did this and it went through.
But if you're as good as keeping up with your emails as I am, I currently have 57 in the inbox. I don't have a clue what any of them are.
I got like 15,000, but that's an entirely different story.
Yeah, that's overkill.
And in all honesty, because I had Reed and I had Scott, who made like 20, finished worse than Reed did. I kind of wish I did the same thing you did.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of glad I did, because now I still have some guys available for this week. We will get to our one and done picks. But first, I want to talk about a couple storylines. Number one is Tiger Woods, obviously. Comes in this week, and he needs a performance. Tiger is currently sitting at, I think I saw him at 56. Is that where he's at? 57 is where Tiger's at now. Dropped from 49 to 57 at TPC Boston. So Tiger currently has, 620 points? And to get inside the top 30 is currently 893. So he's about 270 points behind. But you got to figure everybody ahead of him is getting points as well. So I was kind of looking at the points. It looks like Tiger's going to need probably a solo fourth or better this week at the BMW to play his way into the Tour Championship. Tiger knows that. He was asked about it and talked about it last week. What he said was a W would take care of it. So obviously that's where his mind is at. I said, I think he's close, and I think he found some form toward the end of last week. How optimistic are you that Tiger can be a contender, finish solo fourth or better, and get himself to East Lake?
Well, this is how I feel on it. And I've got Tiger, spoiler alert, going forward for our Ideal DraftKings lineup. I do have Tiger in my Ideal DraftKings lineup.
Get off my Tiger pick on DraftKings.
Well, here's the reason that I want to pick Tiger. Two main reasons. One, you already alluded to it, where he needs a really high finish to make it to East Lake, and we all know that's one of his goals. But second is that even if he's having a bad tournament, he knows that this is going to be his last reps before the U.S. Open. So he's going to want to play as good.
That's true, because he ain't playing Safeway.
No, there's no chance. Absolutely no chance. And so this, even if he's out of the tournament, he's going to do everything that he can to play and figure it out.
He's going to grind.
He's going to, exactly.
Just like he did at Boston.
Exactly. And with there not being a cut, I just don't see it being one of those situations where he's playing bad after two rounds and withdraws because his back hurts. I don't think that'll happen, because unless there's a significant injury concern, he's going to want to get in as many reps as he can so he can be ready for the US Open. Because, I mean, he has to know in the back of his head, and even his caddies come out and admit to it, he hasn't played enough. And so he knows that. So he's going to need to get in as many reps and serious reps as he can. And so I think that's why he's going to have a hyper-focus this week no matter how he's playing. I'm not optimistic that he's going to finish in the top five, but I do think that he's going to play solid, and it's just going to be a matter of if he gets that putter rolling decent enough, because his it seems like with his driver, his misses have... He still misses fairways some, but his distance from the center of the fairway is a lot better than it used to be.
And what do they call it? Miss dispersion or something like that?
Yeah, we have the... The two different stats are you can find distance from edge of center of the fairway and distance from edge of the fairway, either or kind of the accuracy. They're better metrics to go off of than just simply driving accuracy. And so, like you said, like you've been mentioning a lot of time, Colby, that's getting better, and he's obviously one of the best iron players in the world, has been ever since he came out. And if he's just able to get that putter clicking just a little bit, he's going to have a chance to win and contend. It's just I think that he's just in that process period right now, and that's the way I think that his mind is. And with his mind working like that, the way that it is, I don't know if he's gotten enough repetitions and has enough belief to finish inside of the top five to make it to East Lake. Just my personal opinion, but I do think that he will grind out four rounds and play serious golf, and that's why I'm rostering it in DraftKings.
Yeah, I actually think that he does have a chance to be there at the end of the week, because he knows that he needs to get into East Lake, and I think he wants to accomplish that. I think that means a lot to him, so I think he's going to be absolutely dialed in this week. Some other big names that need really good weeks to get themselves inside the top 30. The last man in was Louis Oosthuizen. First man out was Doc Redman at 71. So, pour one out for Doc season as he's no longer with us at 71. Louis Oosthuizen at 70. Chucky Three Sticks is one spot ahead of him at 69. Nice position to be in. Paul Casey's at 64. Matty Fitz is at 60. Bubba's at 58. Kuchar's at 55. Our guy Taylor Gooch is at 52. Man, I would love nothing more than to see Gooch get out and have a good performance this week, especially considering you look at the top 30 who get into the Tour Championship. You know the exemptions that come along with getting into the Tour Championship, don't you?
I don't have them right in front of me, but I know they're pretty damn serious.
I got them off. So everyone who advances to the top 30 will earn exemptions into the 2021 Masters, U.S. Open, Open Championship, and the WGC Mexico.
Nice.
Just making the top. I mean, you can finish 30th. You barely make it to East Lake. You get to play in the Masters, the U.S. Open, and the Open Championship. And WGC Mexico, those are serious events. So you look at some of these guys in the top 30 currently who probably wouldn't otherwise be in some of those events. Just looking here, like Kevin Streelman, Adam Long are currently sitting at 28 and 27. Scroll up a little bit further, you get like a Ryan Palmer at 22, somebody like that. Abraham Anser doesn't have any wins. His world golf ranking is high enough, though, that he'll be in a lot of stuff. Sebastian Munoz, Lanto Griffin currently sit at 16 and 15. Brendan Todd is at 13, obviously a couple wins. He's got a lot of exemptions to his name, and then you get higher up and you get to guys with more exemptions. But even like Harris English.
That's who I was about to mention.
He was on the Korn Ferry Tour Finals last year and didn't make it through. Didn't make it through Korn Ferry Tour Finals. And he's now sitting at 6, so he's going to make it to East Lake, and he's going to have exemptions into all those events next year. Pretty cool for a lot of those guys.
Oh, absolutely. And if you can keep up that play, then it's just going to be like you mentioned with Harry English and how fickle this game is, that he's able to get himself into these exemptions. And this is kind of the year where you see stuff like this, Colby, and it was just such a weird occasion with the corona that started, because you look at a lot of these guys, like you mentioned, like Sebastian Munoz and Lanto Griffin, and even like a Brendan Todd who won twice earlier in the year, but still look at the amount of events that they've played compared to these other guys, because the season got cut in half essentially. So a lot of these guys who were able to play, who wanted to play in the fall and just gain status instead of use that for their break, like a lot of the bigger names do, they were able to get more points to get out there in front. One of the things that the back or the whatever they call it, wraparound season, kind of benefits some of these other guys, like the Adam Long and the other guys we mentioned, because they played 24, 23 to 25 events, when you have guys down there like a Ryan Palmer that you mentioned, who's only played 17.
Yeah, Lanto's played more events than anyone else in the top 70, and Sebastian Munoz is T2 with those 24 events. Tyler Duncan's at 32, also played 24 events. Harry Higgs is at 48, played 24 events. And Adam Long, just inside the top 30, also played 24 events. Then you look at a guy like Tyrrell Hatton, who's had a great year. He's at 17th. He played 9 events. Tiger, we talked about him at 57. Tiger's only played 6 events and is at 57. So he's done well in 6 events just to get himself to the BMW.
Seriously, yeah. And that win is really what's catapulted him to it. And yep. Look, I mean, just for comparison, comparison's sake, like Patrick Cantlay's played 11 times. Adam Scott's played 9 events in their 37th, 38th, respectively. Even someone who's played a decent amount, Gary Woodland's only played 16 events, so that's 9 less than Lanto has. So, I mean, that's a lot of events, and you see that from time to time. It was like Sungjae last year played 38 events or 5 events, whatever it was. And so you see that a little bit, but this year it was just a little bit different because of Corona. And so I think for a lot of those guys that you mentioned who got out there in the fall, and some of those guys like Munoz and Lanto Griffin, they won a fall event, so they've got some status for a while, so that's not necessarily their concern.
Right.
But for them to be able to get into the top 30, like you said, all the perks that you get from it, and also, too, I think that for the FedEx and everything, DFL just finishing 30th, you're going to get over 300K, I believe. I may be wrong on that, but it's something along those lines. And so
it's a nice payday for a good season of work.
Exactly. And you look at the fine line. I mean, right now, the last guy in would be Billy Horschel at 30 and Joaquin Niemann at 31 would be the last man out. And I mean,
you see how many points separate them? 15. 15, yeah, 15. FedEx Cup points separate them. We got triple points this week. There is going to be so much volatility on who falls out and who makes their way up into the to the top.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at it comparatively to last week. Like Joaquin Niemann was 26th, and then he dropped down to 31. So had this been this week's event, he would have been inside the top 26 and then moved outside to 31. And then you have other guys like Adam Long was 21st last week, moved down to 27th. And then just to show the moves that you can make, Harry English finished solo second, moved up from 27th to 6th. So
Russell Henley went from 101 to 61, the biggest mover in the FedEx Cup standings last week. Louis went from 99 to 70, so that was good. Some guys who we talked about last week who weren't able to work their way in. Phil didn't work his way in. Ricky did not work his way in. Tommy Fleetwood, Justin Rose, those are some of the bigger names from a week ago who were not able. Jordan Spieth, obviously, his season's over, to work their way in to
Justin Rose,
to the BMW Championship.
Obviously,
yeah.
Koepka missed the cut.
Yeah. Shane Lowry was never even close, never in contention. So, yeah, it's going to be a lot of volatility. Even guys like Hovland and Wolff, you know, Hovland's had a great season. Wolff's had a pretty good year as well. Hovland currently sits at 24th, and Wolff sits at 33. So at 24, Hovland is by no means comfortable that he's going to be at Eastlake. And Matthew Wolff sitting at 20 is by no means comfortable. You know, he's got to have a good week, make sure he gets in the top 30.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. No, yeah, Wolff sitting down.
Does his opposite field win get him all the same exemptions? It doesn't, does it?
No, that doesn't. I don't believe that gets him into the majors. I believe that gets him, I don't know if it's the full 2 year status. I know he'll get some exemption from it, but I don't believe he gets the winners of all the normal events. They'll get into all of the majors.
Now, and Hovland's official world golf ranking will get him there.
Yes.
But it won't be his win.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I believe that's correct. I'm not.
He's 31st currently in the official world golf ranking. Ricky's 36. Wolf's 38. Yeah. So they're all high enough in the OWGR that they'll get into the majors and the big events.
Yes, at this point, yes.
That's very volatile.
Yes, and so going through the rest of this year, I don't think it's a problem. 2021, I mean, you have a couple bad weeks there in a row, you drop outside of it, and it's very easily possible. Maybe not so much for Wolff and Hovland because they haven't been out on the tour for 2 years, so they don't have as many events as Ricky would from 2 years ago. So if Ricky has some good events that drop off, he may be concerned, but at the same time, I don't think that's that big of a concern. But for this week, for these guys to get to Eastlake, I mean, I'm not sure what exactly the final point is for the cutoff. Like, for example, you got like Mark Leishman and Kevin Na are at 20 and 21 respectively. Are they, and there's only 5 points that separate those guys. And you got at 22 and 23, you got Palmer and Kisner who both have exactly 1,078 points. So, you know, at what point are those guys fully secured to get onto it? I mean, if you have two guys who are down in the 60s that finish solo first, solo second, that's going to push a lot of guys back because it's going to have a lot of guys jump up. The odds of that may be slim because, like you saw, someone like DJ wins by 11, and a lot of these big names are inside of the top 10 of the FedEx Cup points already. So are they going to have bad weeks while these other lower guys have good weeks to jump some of these other guys out? It was kind of like I thought it would be, Colby. From what I saw on this weekend, there was a decent amount of volatility on how much a birdie and a bogey impacted you on Sunday. I mean,
Robbie Shelton was grinding down the stretch to get himself in, and he did. He's in this week at the BMW Championship. So, yes, there was a lot of volatility. Guys, you know, being at 62, making a bogey, now you're at 73. Or you're at 77, you make a birdie, now you're at 68. Stuff like that was happening last week. There's going to be even more of that this week whenever we're looking at that 30 number, guys trying to get to East Lake.
Oh, absolutely, 100%. And I think that, just like you mentioned, it's going to be – while obviously there's still great players out there, and Doc Redman was having such a great year at 71 – there's a big difference between the top 30 and the top 70. So, I mean, while we had some really big names not make it to this tournament, who you think would a Spieth, a Rose, Fleetwood, some of these other guys, and the shortened season had a little bit to do with that, but nevertheless still showed the type of form that they were having. And, I mean, we're going to have some really, really, really big names not make it to East Lake. And it's going to be fairly interesting to see how they handle it, and then how much that maybe 2 weeks extra prep will give some of these guys for Wingfoot as compared to guys that make it to East Lake. Because, like we mentioned with the traveling thing, I don't see the safe way there being that many players who are going to be playing Wingfoot going traveling across the country to play that. So it'll be interesting to see how the prep goes for this. But, I mean, Sunday's going to be intense. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And unless you're one of these guys, and I would say, I don't know, maybe top 20 is probably the cutoff, and even then, it's not securely definitely safe. But at the same time, I think that with these many great players between 20 and 50 or 60, even 70, I mean, all the way down to Louis at 70, so many great players, and Sunday's going to be so intense with just a putt made here, a putt missed there, and it's going to change people's lives and careers just based off of not even what they do, but what someone else does.
Yeah, no doubt it is. A lot of good golf has been played lately. Let me just tell you, if you think that what Dustin Johnson did at TPC Boston is impressive, you should see what McRae Roofing can do right here in the great state of Oklahoma. McRae Roofing is the absolute best in the business. We talked about, we were out at Oak Tree. We actually saw Jeff out at Oak Tree. We were able to catch up a little bit, so it was good to run in to Jeff McRae, who's the owner of McRae Roofing, views your roof like a canvas. His team's sole purpose is to create you a masterpiece of a roof, which brings out the beauty of your home and its surroundings, a beauty that will last for years to come. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000 or visit them online at McRaeRoofing.com. That's McRaeRoofing.com, 405-692-4000. Give them a call. Taylor, why don't we go ahead and dive into our ideal DraftKings lineups this week to get things kicked off, and then we'll dive into our one-and-done picks, best bets, some of your guys on DraftKings that we weren't able to fit into our lineups that you like as well. I'll get us started, and why don't we just start at the top this week, because I just want to go ahead and prematurely pat myself on the back for making such a great pick with my most expensive pick in DraftKings, a guy that's probably going to win the tournament this week, and that's Justin Thomas at $10,800, $700 cheaper than DJ, a couple hundred cheaper than Rahm. So I actually feel like I'm getting pretty good value with JT, whose ball striking will be rewarded at Olympia Fields. Best strokes gained tee to green since the restart for Justin Thomas. Love me some JT at 10-8. He's going to be right there at the end of the week. If I were to give you one pick this week to win, throwing odds and everything out the window, it would be Justin Thomas. So I'm definitely running him out at 10-8 on DraftKings.
Yeah, it's the third most expensive there. It's pretty decent value for a guy who's, like we mentioned, was number one in the world a few weeks ago, now down to number three. How do you feel about last couple weeks, Colby finished T37 after winning FedEx St. Jude, finished T37 at Harding Park, and then finished T49 last week. Pretty not so weekend with basically even par both two rounds. Is that not scary way at all? You think that he's just the winning even, slump?
Not even a little bit. I think, you know, a lot of times we see guys on the PGA Tour, you win and then you have a couple of so-so starts. Even these great players, you have a couple of so-so starts after a win because it's just hard to play your absolute best and have your absolute A game for 4 days, week in and week out. So you have to kind of forecast and see, okay, when is a guy after he's won a tournament and then had some so-so finishes, when does he pop again? And that's like DJ won the Travelers, kind of so-so, good finish at the PGA obviously, and then comes out and wins by 11. I don't think JT's winning by 11 this week, but I do think that we're going to get a really strong showing from Justin Thomas. I also think the fact that it is a par 70 that measures north of 7,300 yards, longest par 70 on tour since they went away from
Firestone.
Yes, sir. Firestone was par 70, like 7,400 yards.
It was long.
Is what Firestone was. Yeah, and Tiger just ate it up year after year after year for about two decades. So, yeah, I think his ball striking will be very well rewarded at Olympia Field. So I'm all in on JT this week. The low finishes at the PGA and TPC Boston don't worry me in the slightest.
I actually agree with you there, Colby. I think JT's going to have a good week. One thing I look at this week, Colby, and I've most of my DraftKings picks are built around this. A couple of them are some young names who would need fairly decent weekends. But I think what you look at is, like, for example, we go back and look at these FedEx Cup standings. And for me, this is just for me on the outside looking in. For example, like a guy that we've liked all year, you know, for cheaper value, Tyler Duncan, who he's sitting right now at 32. Well, for someone like Tyler Duncan, making it into the top 30, as you mentioned, with all the exemptions, is so much bigger than for someone, one of these really bigger names who already has a fat bank account.
So much more pressure for Tyler Duncan.
And is already a top 10 player in the world, already these different things. So my perspective is that these guys that already have a little bit more security may be able to play better just because they don't have that either conscious or subconscious fear of, oh, I need to make it here to, or I need to play this good to have this breakthrough in my career. I think there's only two guys in my lineup who haven't made it to East Lake. Maybe another one, he's a European player, he might not, but I still think he has. But nevertheless, I'll go ahead and break it all down. So my most expensive guy, you mentioned him, he's second most expensive on DraftKings, just a little bit more than Thomas. Give me Rahm. He's been playing well the last couple of weeks. He wasn't playing particularly well there for a stretch, and then obviously won the Memorial, and then didn't play very well after his win, kind of like Thomas at the St. Jude. But then since then finished T13th at the PGA and then finished 6th last week at the Deutsche Bank, like what I saw with the 65 on Sunday. So for the second most expensive guy, for a guy, like I mentioned, has a little bit of security, give me him at 11,000 even. And then my second most expensive guy is probably one of the cheapest, second most expensive guys I had all year. I kind of wanted to keep a pretty steady lineup here, kind of go middle tier, get a lot of those guys who I was just kind of mentioning about. And I already said I'm going to pick him. Give me Tiger at 8,600. I mean, I think that, like I said, I don't think that if I had to bet will he make it to East Lake or not, I would say no. But I think he's going to give out four competitive good rounds of grinding golf. And where that ends him up on the leaderboard, I'm not exactly sure. It depends on how the putter goes and if there's maybe a day where the back tightens up or not. Hopefully that doesn't happen. But I just think you're going to get four rounds of serious golf from Tiger. And for 8,600, it seems like a pretty good price for that.
Yeah, I thought 8,600 was great value on Tiger. I already obviously mentioned, called you a copycat, stealing my Tiger pick on DraftKings. That's also my second most expensive. So we both went kind of one high and then very much in the middle tier. So Tiger at 8,600 is my second guy. We've already given a lot of thoughts on him. So my third most expensive guy now, and I'm taking a little bit of a flyer here, but he's got the talent to pop and win. He's currently just outside the top 30, and he's been playing pretty good golf lately. Give me Matthew Wolf. You can call me an OSU homer if you want to. Give me Matthew Wolf at 8,200. I think at 8,200, you're getting a guy who I legitimately think, if he plays well, could win the golf tournament. It wouldn't be my pick to win the golf tournament, but at 8,200, I feel like he's got a better chance to win it than guys around him in that same price range. So with no cut this week, especially because that's kind of been his problem, his consistency, and he's actually gotten that figured out a little bit since the restart. I like Matthew Wolf at 8,200.
Yeah, I think that you look at some of the guys around him, and you can. There's so many great names, obviously, in this tournament with it being a playoff event, and the 8,000 range is a really good range. There's so many great players in there, and I went down the OSU hole, Colby, right around that same range, but I didn't go with Wolf, and I'll go and get my pick out here in just a second. I'll give out my two next expensive. In all honesty, there's two guys at 8,300, and they both fit perfectly into my lineup. They were my last pick because I built my lineup around some of these other guys. And the two guys are Harry English and Hatton. And
did you put them both in?
I did not put them both okay. in. The reason I did not is because one of them I picked in the one and done. And so normally I don't like to have all my eggs in the basket. Last week I did that with Adam Scott. I had him in my DraftKings and my one and done because it just fit perfectly. And he played horribly. So that's normally what happens. So So I guess if you put two and two together, you can figure out who my one and done pick is going to be. But 8,300 for my DraftKings, give me Hatton. I think that he played a great round on Saturday, shot what 63 or something like that. Shot 63. Didn't have the best Sunday with a 72, but at the same time, like I said, I would probably if I didn't pick English in the one and done, I'd probably go with him instead of Hatton. Probably like him a little bit more, but I still like Hatton's chances, and I just kind of want to diversify a little bit there. And so Hatton there, 8,300. Then my next guy, similar lines as you, Colby, OSU guy, young guy, been playing pretty good. Just $100 cheaper than your Wolf pick. Give me Hovland, 8,100.
Get off my Victor Hovland pick. What are you doing?
You and Wolf and Hovland?
Why not?
You are the
hashtag why not? Hashtag OSU, don't hate on the Pokes.
I wasn't going to call you an OSU homer, but now, which is kind of funny because I have another OSU player in my lineup. It's just not guys in the 8,000 range. But you are an OSU homer, no doubt about it.
You know what happened? I went to Carson yesterday. It was awesome. It's always awesome. Awesome. I was surrounded by all of the Swinging Petes. Bumped into Coach Bratton, Austin Eckroat, all those guys up there. The whole team was out there, men's and women's teams, having their meeting, getting their practice session in on their little team range they've got back on the side of
it's
number 10.
Little.
And no, it is not little. It is a phenomenal practice area. And I don't know. I just got that orange flowing through my veins yesterday at Carson, and I guess it was still there whenever I decided to fill out my DraftKings lineup because, Hovland and Wolf, baby, let's go. Final pairing on Sunday, two of them.
And we had talked about this where if the guys who hadn't, because I don't believe...
you're going to love my cheapest pick,
Wolf didn't make it to East Lake last... I know he won a tournament
last year,
but he did not make it to East Lake. I was about to say, there's no way. So those are two guys there who haven't been able to make it. So is that something that's in the back of their mind, something that they know could be big? At this point, not exactly sure.
They're built for this, Tyler. Well, they went to Oklahoma State. They're built for this.
No, don't give me that BS. But, we just look at Hovland's consistency I'm trying to scroll through here, and I can't scroll down far enough to see a missed cut anywhere. I just keep scrolling.
I found one of Hovland's balls yesterday at Carson. It had the Augusta logo on the side and said Masters Tournament.
There's only probably a few people that have played that tournament and Carson, so you're kind of...
And by the way, where I found it, it actually might not have been his, because I don't know how he would have hit a golf ball where I found it.
Maybe he got some and gave them to a friend or something like that. That could have been the case.
I was like 20 yards deep in the trees, like in the forest. I actually found my ball and ended up making bogey, but I found his out there.
Maybe because Bratton caddied for him, didn't he, when he played?
Yes, in USAM?
Yeah. Maybe Bratton swiped a few sleeves of balls, and maybe that's what
he might
his.
Have, yeah.
That's probably what it was.
I don't know. He's a good player in his own right. I know where I hit it on 13 is not somewhere anyone playing a Masters tournament ball should ever hit it on 13.
So it was close to where you hit it. So what you're trying to put two and two together. Here and something's not adding up.
Yeah, I took iron off the tee for accuracy, and you know that center of the fairway miss distance.
Yeah,
it was like 70 yards.
So you lay up with an iron into the hazard.
Lay up with an iron into the forest because it was unmarked.
Yeah,
and I got it out, made bogey, no big deal.
Nothing wrong with bogey.
Love bogeys when I hit it in the trees off the tee. So I'm all in, baby. Orange power, go Pokes, pistols firing, all of it, all of it. Give me all of it.
Well, you got a couple more picks, or you got at least one more to give.
I got two more picks.
Okay, well, throw them all out there.
Let me finish out here. So I'm going with a bomber at 7,500. 7,300 yards, par 70, long golf course, only two par fives. I need a guy who can strike it, who can hit it a long ways, and who can potentially pop and have a high finish. Give me Cameron Champ.
I knew you were going to say it. I'm fired up about my DraftKings this week. You were given the description, and I said I was about to say it. I didn't want to cut you off, but I knew you were going to say it. And he's what, 7,500?
7,500. Let me look at the value, the way he struck it at Harding Park.
Missed cut last week.
I don't care about that.
I think he missed the cut on the number, though. He shot, what was he, two under? He was two under for the tournament. So missed the cut on the number. We talk about it all the time. You get within one cut. I mean,
that means he had two more days to rest up for Olympia Fields.
He literally, every description you just gave was right on.
I like taking guys. You remember whenever I took Phil at Memphis? And my justification was, well, there's no cut. And this is a guy who can pop. I like taking a guy like Cameron Champ when there's no cut.
Because he can shoot a 62 any of the rounds.
Yeah, I mean, if he's on, he can really go low. If he's not, he can miss the cut. So I like him there. And then my last pick at 6,600. Go Pokes. Pistols firing. Orange power. Carson Creek. They're built for this, Taylor. Give me Taylor Gooch at 6,600.
We're gonna have too many guys that are the same.
Yes, in this sir. Lineup. So we've got Tiger, Hovland, and Gooch, all three of them.
I think so.
That's a disaster for all three of those guys.
Oh my lord! So Taylor, and Hovland, and Tiger. So sorry to you guys. We really are.
I mean, Victor, Tiger, we don't know you personally. Taylor, we love you, buddy. Good luck this week. Sorry for the hex.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we deeply apologize there. So we already know who that is. So I'll go with my only other golfer left. I give Gooch. I mean, I'll give out a little bit of details just for anyone who isn't aware, who isn't from around the state. Three out of the last four tournaments he's played, he's finished inside the top 25. And so, I mean, he's finished 18th last week at Deutsche Bank, which, like we mentioned, or not, I keep calling it Deutsche Bank because it was at Boston, Northern Trust. And it threw me off too, because on Sunday, I don't know if you were watching, Cole, because you were playing a match, but they had a weather delay.
I was
delay.
Catching fire in the match, for the record.
Yes, you were. And DJ was on like 17 or something and had to blow the horn for weather delay.
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
Yeah, there was like an hour, maybe even a little bit more weather delay. And there was only two groups on the course.
Oh, and it was on Sunday?
Yeah.
Okay, that's right. So we were on the course. We were out here at the greens. We had a two-man best ball match play. And I kept refreshing the phone because I wanted to see if DJ got to 30. You know, because he was at 29 through 16 holes. And I told the guys in my group, I said, if he doesn't get to 30, he's a chump. They shouldn't even get in the trophy. You can't end a tournament at 29. Come on. Not when there's a par 5 to close. And I kept refreshing the phone and nothing. Yeah. I couldn't get anything. So they were in a weather delay.
They were in a weather delay. Yes, absolutely. And so whenever they did that, they were showing highlights of like the Northern Trust from 3 years ago, and it was entirely different course. And I'm like, why are they showing a different tournament? What in the world? And it's like, oh, this is the tournament. They just moved the course and canceled the other. I mean,
are they just flip-flopping from Liberty National to TPC Boston now? Are those the only two in the rotation?
I think they have a few more in the rotation.
Well, next year it's back at Liberty National. It was just at Liberty National last year. I don't know where it's at going forward, but I know they said on the broadcast that next year they would be at Liberty National.
Because they were kept switching. They would have it at, I think they had it at Aromanic, I believe.
Aromanic, they did.
They did one time. Then they had it at, they flopped around for some of the New York courses around there. But nevertheless, going back to this tournament, yeah, Gooch finished top 25 in three out of four events, four out of six events, as a matter of fact. And looking back on it, has his last two events has shot in six of his eight rounds are in the 60s. So I'll go ahead and sign me up for that at 6,600. And we mentioned, I get the Northern Trust. I'll rephrase now. So Deutsche Bank, this is going to be a ball striker's course, and he's a great iron player. So I don't see for that value, especially with no cut and a guy who. And for Taylor, too, this is the way I look at it, because we mentioned earlier those guys who these could be big monumental jumps. Tyler, like we mentioned, Tyler Duncan, who's at 32, he doesn't need to have a top 10, 5 or 10 finish to, you know, right. to secure
he only
his
to
spot.
Hop a couple guys.
Exactly. And someone like Taylor, who's in the low 50s,
got nothing to lose.
Knows that he needs a top probably 8 or 6 finish, probably somewhere around there.
Probably more than that, top 5 finish.
With ties, so he can go out there with no pressure, essentially.
Nothing to lose, fire flags.
And his fire at flags. I love it. And then my last guy at 7,400, just to round out the lineup here, one of the only three guys that will have different.
Yeah. I'm booing your 7,400 pick.
Why? Because you know who it is?
Yeah, he's on my fade list this week. I'm out.
Why do you say that?
Well, there's two guys at 7,400, so I'm assuming the one that you're taking is Matt Kuchar?
Yes.
Man, long golf course, 73 and change, par 70. It's something about Matt Kuchar, I just call it a gut feeling if you want to. I just don't like Matt Kuchar at a big, long ball strikers golf course. I like Matt Kuchar at Harbortown, somewhere like that. I'm out on Matt Kuchar at a course like Olympia Fields, but he's played well lately, so he could very well prove me wrong.
Yeah, I mean, he last week finished T18, had all rounds in the 60s, just a steady player, and like you mentioned, there's no cut. Normally, you pick Kuchar as a guy who, you know, at a tournament where you say, oh, I just want a guy to get me four rounds. Well, he's normally that guy who will just knock it out of the park for you. I just, like you said, it may just be an opposite gut feeling thing that you have, Colby. I just think Kuchar's going to, I don't think he's going to win the tournament by any stretch. I wouldn't. You'll give some of your best bets here in a little bit. I wouldn't list him on there. But for a middle-of-the-pack 7,400 guy, and for some of those other guys that are around him, I really like him. I mean, like he's tied with Brendan Todd. I like him a little bit more than Todd, because he's, over the last 2 weeks, Todd has he finished 64th last week and then missed the cut the week before. So Kuchar's on just a little bit better form. And like, just some of the other guys around there, and he fit into my lineup well. I like Kuchar. I think he'll finish inside the top 20 or so, I believe.
Yeah. I'm fading Kuchar this week, but I understand the logic. He's been playing well lately. Let's go ahead and move on here. Like I said, I'll give you some of my best bets real quick, and then we'll get to our one and done. So I'm betting five guys this week. Three of them are favorites. Thought about DJ, but his odds are so bad. He's 8-1, which, you know, it's only, you know, Rom's 10-1. It's only a couple worse. But I just kind of have a rule about not betting a guy the week after he wins because it is so, so rare that a guy wins back-to-back weeks.
DeChambeau did it a couple years ago, but it's one of the few times that it...
And DeChambeau did it the first two legs of the playoffs.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
That's when there were four legs, though.
Correct, yeah. Yes. And so, yeah, I was just re-advising your point there that it doesn't happen hardly ever because of the celebration, the mental fatigue it takes to win a golf tournament. And so I agree with you. But for someone of DJ's caliber, it would be a lot less shocking than someone else who's coming off.
I would not be shocked if DJ won this week. Right. I wouldn't. I just kind of have a rule about betting a guy who won the week before because you're almost always throwing your money away and you're almost always getting bad odds because he's hot. So that guy's usually the favorite, or if it's a longer shot, the one, if it's like a 50-1 guy who won, then the next week he'll be 20-1 and you're not getting any value now on it. So I'm kind of out on that. So, but I am taking three of the top four favorites. I'm putting 20 on Rom, 20 on DeChambeau, and 20 on Thomas. Rom's 10-1, DeChambeau's 14-1, Thomas is 14-1. So I like those guys. And then I'm putting 10 each on a couple of long shots. Tiger at 35-1.
You do it every week.
Always in on Tiger with 10. Am I minus units right now on Tiger betting? None of your business. And then we'll move on.
You might not be because you bet him at the Masters.
That's true.
Last year.
I'm probably not actually because I had... No, I'm definitely not because I had 100 on him at 16-1 at the Masters. So I'm still well on the high side for Tiger units.
Yeah, when you're betting 10 bucks pop there. Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah, definitely. And then I'm putting 10 on Cameron Champ at 80-1. Why not? No cuts.
He could pop. Bomber. Just like you said. Yeah.
Yeah, ball striker. So those are my bets this week. John Rahm, Bryson DeChambeau, Justin Thomas, Tiger Woods, and Cameron Champ is my super long shot at 80-1. Boy, I'd love to hit an 80-1 winner.
That would be nice.
Don't get too many of those.
That's why they're 80-1.
That's why they're 80-1. You don't get too many of those.
Because it doesn't happen often.
And he is similarly priced to Sungjae at 80-1, Abraham Ancer at 80-1, Russell Henley at 80-1, and then some bum named Matt Kuchar at 80-1.
So kind of goes to show you were talking about fade and Kuchar on that aspect. And, you know, I, like you said, I think that for someone like Champ who has so much talent, it can just click at any moment. And if he, with how far he hits it, if he's hitting fairways and making putts, then he's going to be right up there like he was at the PGA Championship. And then it gets into a situation of kind of like he did at Harding Park. Does the pressure get to him and start making some bogeys or double, make a bad swing, let it get away from him? That's where the experience comes in and will better him in the future. And it's just a matter of he can get over the hump. But at 80-1 for 10 bucks, I don't see anything wrong with that. $800 return for 10 bucks, sign me up.
Yeah. Go ahead and fire out one of your one and done picks.
One of my...
We'll start on the website.
I'll do both the same. I'll do this. There was three guys who I wanted to pick for my one and done. Three guys I really wanted to pick who I still have available in both pools. So I'll give out the guy that I'm not picking, and I'll give out one of my other picks. I already mentioned one of my other picks earlier, and that's Harry English, because he was tied with Hatton at 8,300. So
you're using him in both, or just on the website?
Both. Okay, yeah, I'll use English in both. I mean, I'll pull up his exact results here to make sure that I don't want to do him any disrespect to show how good he has been playing. So here's this last few events for English. Finished solo second last week, 23rd, 19th, 18th, 13th, 17th. And then that was since the very first event back where he missed the cut at Charles Schwab and at the Colonial. So with just the form that he's been on, I have to run him out at some point. Right after a second, I think that he's going to play well, especially knowing that he has that security of that he's in East Lake. Because when you're sixth in the standings, you're not going to fall 24 spots or whatever it is. So he's already there, and I think that gives him a little bit of cushion because, like you mentioned, once Harry English gets to East Lake, him winning that tournament, even though he's from Georgia, will have such a huge impact on his career that I think he may have a little bit of nerves going for there. So I'll go ahead and get him out while he's in form, and I don't think the nerves will be as high as they will be
now because he's pretty much in East Lake. He's sixth. I mean, there's no chance he's in East Lake,
of course. And so. Then the other guy who I'm not picking who I really wanted to is Scheffler. He shot, the only reason I'm really not is because he shot a 59 last week. And I know that, you're not picking a guy because he shot 59. Real smart logic, dumbass. But my theory is that once you have such a really low round like that, a 59 is almost like winning a tournament in a sense, where it takes a lot out of you because there's a celebration from it.
Yeah, and it's golf history.
Yeah, there's a lot less people that have shot 59 than have won a PGA Tour tournament. You know, so the odds of doing it are slim. So that's the only reason I'm going with the other guy. And I also had thought of the other guy before this. But over the last 4 weeks, Scheffler's finished 4th, 4th, 15th, and 22nd. So I don't see anything wrong with that. If we had to pick three golfers this week, he would be my third. And he'll probably end up winning because he's the other guy who I'm not going to pick. So that's another guy that I like. But my first pick is English. You go ahead with yours.
Yeah, I'm going to on the website. So I'm actually using four different golfers this week for the website and the podcast. So I'll give you both of mine on the website too, because my picks I'm making on the website, I'm making out of a matter of principle. It's a matter of principle, Taylor, that if 1 week you select golfers and you forget to press the submit button and they both play like ass for 4 days, 2 days in Tony Finau's case, you got to run them out the next week. You just have to, because that means that there is some sort of something going on in the universe that wanted you to save these guys for the next week. So I'm running out Finau and Reed. I don't care. I don't care about form. I don't care about anything. I'm running out Finau and Reed because it is a sign from the universe that I didn't click submit last week. I got to run them both out for a top five this week. Got to.
Man, if that's the way you want to take it, go for it. I mean, I've heard of worse logic in my life. So
it's on principle, Taylor. It is on principle. I forgot to submit last week. I just clicked submit. They're in. Picks are made. Finau and Reed.
Check your email confirmation. Make sure it's in. That way you don't have to give my girlfriend smack for doing
something. There it is. Pick confirmation.
There it
right
is.
There.
You got it in. So you're good on that. And do you want to give out your whips or your pool or podcast?
Yeah. Absolutely. Let's do. Let's start with a good, healthy, hearty cheeseburger, shall we? Little Daniel cheeseburger. Okay. Ball striking machine since the restart.
He's been playing good.
He's up there every week.
I use him for T2 at the FedEx. So yep. He's been in pretty good form. And yeah, it's hard to go wrong with that.
Yeah, so then I had to decide. At some point, I've got to start using some big names, or I'm going to have more big names than I have tournaments. So this week, I wanted to run one out in our podcast pool, because I've got more big names available in the podcast pool because we started later, obviously. I'm running out John Rahm this week. I'm running out John Rahm alongside Daniel Berger. I don't know if you noticed, I'm diversifying myself a lot more this week with my picks, with my bets that I'm doing. I don't have all my eggs in the same baskets. I've got a lot of different guys across a lot of different pools that I'm running out. So give me Rahm and Berger as my two in the podcast.
So you're doing the exact opposite of what you did at Finau last week.
Yes.
100%. And how did it work out for you?
It did not work out well last week, so that's probably why I'm doing it. Subconsciously this week, I probably thought, well, I don't want to run the same guy out in everything and have him suck. So
yeah, because that's what happened. You threw your money away, but you knew it. Like you say every time, you know when you're betting Tony Finau, you're just throwing money away, but
yeah.
You did it.
Yeah, but usually you know when you bet Tony Finau that you're going to be disappointed Sunday at around 6 o'clock. I knew Friday by noon that Tony Finau wasn't going to make it. So I got my disappointment out of the way very early and was able to kind of sulk for an hour or two and then move on. Had a good weekend.
So that allowed you to free up a little bit. And the fact that you didn't submit the picks on there allows you to use them this week. So you're
right for a great Tuesday morning.
Hey, I'll bet you a decent amount of money that Finau makes more money at this event than he did last week.
I will not take that bet. I'm out. That is not one of my best bets this week.
No, I probably wouldn't do that either. So I'll go ahead and give out my last one and done pick before we get out of here. Very similar form to Scheffler. I almost feel like I'm reading the exact same results here, but the guy I'm going with is Kisner. And we'll read off his last four events here. T4th at last week, Northern Trust, and then finished third the week before at Wyndham, 19th at the PGA, 25th at Memphis, or in Memphis, missed the Cubs Memorial, but then before that finished third at the Rocket Mortgage. So really since the start of July has played stellar golf. Only one event has finished outside the top 25 with three top four finishes since then. And so I'm going ahead and ride that wave until I see something different.
Yeah, I'm with you. By the way, 43 minutes ago, I just saw this tweet from Justin Rahm. It makes me feel pretty good about my Rahm pick. He said, John Rahm was the only player at the Northern Trust to have more strokes gained off the tee than DJ did. John Rahm finished T6. He ranked 61st in strokes gained approach. Rahm has not had consecutive events with negative strokes gained approach in more than 2 years. So he's bombing it off the tee, And he's going to bounce back with the irons because he's a great iron player. So I feel good about Rom. I like that.
Well, you got him in the one and done. I got him on my DraftKings. So besides the fact that we
get
him,
I bet him.
And besides all these kisses of death for Rom, he's looking good. And I'm telling you, I like Rom's chances too. I think that. Wait, he finished sixth last week?
Yeah, T6.
I would bet he finishes higher than that this week.
Yeah,
I really do.
I would too.
I have a strong feeling about it.
I would, and I did bet that he would finish higher than that this week. I put my money where my mouth is. So, good stuff today. Long show. Appreciate everybody sticking with us. Like I said, due to some golf that we're playing on our end, couldn't get two shows in this week. We figured we'd just do one big one. So, a lot of good stuff. Obviously, 30 under at the Northern Trust from DJ. So, this is our only show this week. We will be back next Monday to recap our two-man event that we're playing in. Hopefully we'll be bringing home the trophy and some cash, and then also recapping the BMW Championship. We will know who is in the field at East Lake. We will know if Tiger made it, if our good friend of the show here, Taylor Gooch, made it, all these guys from Oklahoma State who, for the benefit of my DraftKings lineup, should go ahead and have themselves some good weeks. So good stuff today. Glad everyone was with us. Enjoy the BMW Championship, and we're back next week with more 73rd Hole.